Hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. You're listening to KVSH LP 101.9 in beautiful downtown Vashon Island, Washington. And we are here for the next 30 minutes to tell some stories, pull up a chair, and listen as we talk about food and all the ways that it affects our lives. Today, I have in the studio with me two of my favorite people. We have Mr. Tom Conway, who's going to talk to us about cookbooks. That's what we're talking about today, by the way. And Susan McCabe.
Hello.
Who's here for witty remarks and sparkling conversation.
And to learn about cooking.
Yeah.
She's kind of like the Ed McMahon of the show.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad you're here. Welcome.
Thank you.
And welcome, Susan. I'm glad you're here, too. So, Tom and I were talking the other day about cookbooks and what a role they play in our lives. And I'm sure maybe you remember your first cookbook or mm-hmm. the one your mom made you, you know, gave to you for a birthday or whatever, the Little Betty Crocker cookbook.
Absolutely. In fact, usually my more erudite friends will say, "What are you reading?" And then when I tell them it's a cookbook, they look so down on me.
Like, that's not a book. What are you talking about?
I go, that's a book.
I know. It
has words and pictures.
I take cookbooks to bed with me to read. That's mm-hmm. my nighttime reading. I love to read them. So I tend to like cookbooks that have a little bit of literary flair to them.
Mm-hmm.
Some storytelling in it, as long as...
Well, you know, sometimes like they trick you. They say there's a recipe and then you have to travel with them to Ghana to pick out the cocoa beans. You know, it's like, I just want to make a brownie. Okay.
And it needs to be easy.
Yeah.
It needs
to just want to make a brownie. Yeah.
A special brownie?
Special. No, just your chocolate.
Regular
just
brownies.
Your Dutch chocolate.
Okay. All right. Well, what have you brought with you today, Tom, that we can start talking about in your cookbook repertoire?
So I had just cleaned out my, you know, I was infected by the Marie Kondo?
Yeah,
Marie Kondo clean bug, where you're supposed to clean out stuff and keep things that spark joy. The only trouble was a lot of things spark joy with me, so
I have the same problem.
So Granny's only got a few of my cookbooks, not a lot, or actually it was Friends of the Library. But so today, what I did is I brought sort of I'm a big fan of sort of referential mm-hmm. Cookbooks, like or things that are sort of aggregated, like Fanny Farmer cookbook was my first cookbook. That I got when I got out of college and I was living
in... So that was your first adult cookbook.
It was, yeah. But it was a double. There were two. I bought the Julia Child and More Company because, you know, I was looking for my more sophisticated palate while I was living in Alaska.
Well, Julia would have told you.
She would have. And that was really good because I learned how to make corn timbale, and which everyone needs to know how to make yeah. in Southeast Alaska. And then another one is that I like is a jam, sort of my jam Bible. It's a mi confiture, and it's by Christine Ferber. And I make a lot of jam, and
you
I
do.
Pretty
you
and
do.
And when I discovered this book, I sort of recognized that. She and I make it the same way, which made me it really was my seal of approval because I don't cook it to death. I kind of turn it on, the jam, let it simmer, and then I shut it off. So I sort of do an evaporative jam making.
Well, that's interesting. And then you don't get, you keep the flavor.
You keep the flavor. And that's how she does it. And she would actually keep it overnight. So anyway. Mm-hmm. And then...
I have a little cookbook that is like sort of like that, except it comes from Harrods. And it's jams and jellies.
Oh, and the British are all about that.
Oh, aren't they though? Mm-hmm. Aren't they just?
They're just, they love it. Exactly.
I'm not going to try that. Okay, and what's next?
Okay, and then the other one I like that's a really great reference for my pie baking is Rose Levy Barenbaum, and it's the mm-hmm. Pie and Pastry Bible. And what I like about her, like there are a lot of books where you wonder, like, do they ever proof them or make any of these recipes?
Did they ever
like,
really make it?
Did they just sort of dictate it to mm-hmm. somebody and they printed it? Because, mm-hmm. but this one is one where everything is really tried and true. And what I like about it is she's sort of the master scientist of proportion.
She is. She's fabulous.
She's really good. So if I'm making a pie, and I would always look at it and go like, really? That much cornstarch? Or really? That's not very much thickener or, you know, but I would just stick with her recipe, and which is unusual for me. And, they would come out great,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
So
she's very good.
And it has, and what happens is when you get used to making certain things and you've been doing it forever, then it's kind of fun because it's such a big book. You can just go like, let's see what else you got there in the index.
I got her book, What did I tell you? The Cake Bible. And in it is a recipe for old-fashioned tomato soup chocolate cake. Have you ever heard of that?
I haven't. I think it's because we were talking about it once.
Tomato soup. You put it in the chocolate cake. So I had to make it. I had to see what that was like. And you know what? Uh-huh. It was delicious.
You know, I bet Miss McCabe, you know, she does have refined taste. And tomato soup doesn't sound like an ingredient she would put in a cake, mayonnaise or 7-Up.
She hissed at me when I said the word.
There was judgment.
You've made cakes with 7-Up and mayonnaise.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, oh, yeah. And Coca-Cola,
too. Oh, baby. Oh, yeah, in the South, Coca-Cola cake. It's really good. It's like chocolate, and then you make like a really heavy icing. It's the best.
I love icing.
Well, the icing's good on that one.
Oh, it kind of breaks through, and then it's like soft underneath.
Wow. Well, what's this other book here? The Last Course. Okay, I've never seen that.
So this one is my aspirational cookbook. It's the one that I always look at and I love, but I've never made anything out of it.
Oh, I have a couple of those myself.
And it's what happened. I had a really good, like one of the best gingerbread cakes I've ever had. It was like, usually they're kind of a waste of time for me. It's like, really? You spent that much time making that?
Really?
Yeah, because they're usually never that great.
Well, mine is.
Well, see, there you go. But this one I had was great, and it was from a Gramercy Tavern with Guinness beer
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, that's what I use in mine.
Yeah, so there you go. But this one is by Claudia Fleming with Melissa Clark, and what's sort of crazy about it is, I think I grew to respect it even more when I went to go buy a friend of mine one because they really liked it. And they're out of print, and they're about $169 for the book.
Wow, so, yeah. So well, I'm glad you have that.
Yeah, so I put it behind a little glass partition.
Put a cover on that.
I'm
book.
Going to.
You better put some plastic
but
on that.
But the recipes in here are really great. And she's a serious, you know, pastry chef.
Melissa Clark has done a great job of measuring things and telling us how it works and why it works that way.
Yeah.
I enjoy her work in the New York Times.
Yeah, she's good. Really good. But and the pastry chef, Claudia Fleming,
I don't know her.
She was a James Beard pastry chef of 2004 or something, which when I bought it, she was right on in the middle of things. But I believe that's like 13 years
ago. Well, yeah,
ago.
But that's an investment. See, you made an investment.
It is.
So that's good. Well, I brought... you know, cookbooks, I love cookbooks that tell me what to cook and how to cook and what to do. Mm-hmm. I also love cookbooks that show me some literary value. I like to read stories about
food. That take you to Guyana to buy cocoa.
Well, if I could go, I'd happily go.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the cookbooks I brought, speaking of investment, is called, what is it called here? A Treasury of Great Recipes, and it is by Mary and Vincent Price. I'm not
kidding
you.
Was that his wife?
That was his wife. And, you know, just look at the pictures in here. This was published in...
Oh, my God.
1965.
It's like they're cooking in Zsa Zsa Gabor's living room or something.
I know. And look at this menu from 1969, which is dated over here, written on the back of a sloppy piece of paper.
Oh, my goodness.
And the menu comes from the cookbook.
Wow.
So read that.
Okay. Well, on Wednesday, we were having veal cordon bleu, asparagus, tomato aspic salad with lemon wedges, brandied baked bananas, and coffee. But on Friday the 25th, we moved into cold borscht, a side dish of smelt. Sorry.
I love smelt.
Really?
Do you? I do. Well, now.
Baked potatoes, green salad, fresh fruit, coffee. And I have to tell the listeners that... the pictures in here are remarkable. They really are like something from a avant-garde photographer right now trying to deliberately date things.
And you know who did all the set design and styling of these was Vincent himself. And they wrote all the editorial in there, the two of them.
Wow.
It's like being invited into their home, seriously. And then they highlight...
Or an Edgar Allan Poe movie.
No, it's nice and friendly and pretty and
no,
very
no,
60s.
I mean, it is. It is very friendly. But although that maitre d' in that picture
no,
is
he's
not.
Mean.
He's a little sour.
Turn
the page. Talk about liking literary cookbooks. Mm. Is there something that Tom could read from there that...
Oh, just about anything. You know, he's talking about why we should like this book and in their home and how welcome. It's just a very welcoming, lovely book that gives us an inside glimpse to their marriage and what they did and how they where they traveled, what they ate. It's beautiful. I love it. Did you find something to read?
Yeah, just the
just the beginning.
Page, the beginning, page 27.
Yeah.
Just say pyramid. And that was without the French pronunciation. To any Frenchman who cares about food, and then sit back and listen. One and all, they will tell you without question, it is a great restaurant, is the greatest restaurant in France, which is perhaps another way of saying the greatest in the world. You don't often find unanimous opinion among Frenchmen, so that in itself is a clue. Then each person will tell you as though they were reliving an old love affair about some remarkable meal, some perfect dish that that they once had there. And sooner or later, you will feel that you have tried it yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, lovely. And isn't that amazing how they can compare to a love affair?
Yes.
Because cooking can be very sensual. And I think this is a sensual cookbook. Mm-hmm. However, I have another one that's a little more sensual than that one. And it is called...
You didn't tell me it's this kind of show.
It's kind of steamy in here.
Aren't we public radio?
This is public. This is
or pubic
public
radio.
It's called... Is that, a legal word?
It's not on our list of things we can't say.
I can't.
No.
This book is called Intercourses. Instead of
well, that's on the
first
list.
Courses. But I'm telling you, some of the photography in here and the things that they write about it, arsenal of aphrodisiac powders that you can get from chilies.
Wow.
Just grinding up your chilies.
What do they say about peanut butter?
Well, I don't know. They're talking about salsa.
Okay.
And you know, it's anyway. I noticed that. The photography was most interesting.
I'm going to look under the index for honey because I'm sure just looking at some of these photos that.
Well, there's honey in just about everything. I think there's honey in the pecan recipe for pecan toast.
Pecan French toast.
Ooh, honey drenched figs. I think that's
that's a good one.
That's
too.
A combo that could send
and
you to
I
jail.
And I actually have cooked out of this one. You know, sometimes you are having someone for dinner. You know, you'd like to impress.
In this case, you actually do have someone for dinner and you cook.
And then you see where, then you see who does the dishes.
Or do they have to wait till the next day?
That's true.
Because that happens sometimes
the dishes
too.
Wait.
You know, there's a recipe in there for figs. And if I may interrupt just for a sec, one of the other cookbooks, which I didn't bring, but is my other favorite, is Fran Bigelow's chocolate cookbook.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of like the best chocolate cookbook out there. And, when I used to live in Seattle, I would go. This is when I used to. This is
true
when I
confessions.
To, yes, this is when I used to exercise rapidly, and I would ride my bike from Green Lake to Madison Park to go swimming. Mm-hmm. And the hills were huge and awful. And so anyway, but my treat was when I come back, I'd stop at Fran's because she had this a dried fig that was soaked in something alcoholic that she stuffed with truffle, and it was a giant.
Lord.
It looked like a big fat ripe. Fig basically, and then but it was dipped in a bittersweet chocolate, and it's one of the best things on the planet. And she has it in her cookbook. So if you ever, I'll let you borrow that cookbook, or we should get together and make that.
Let's make that.
Yeah,
we could make
invite
it and bring
friends.
It to the studio one day and talk
and
about it.
Susan, if she behaves, she gets to come too.
Maybe.
Okay,
I'll be good.
Okay,
but we won't have tomato soup.
No tomatoes.
No. So Tom, I would like you to pick one of your books that you brought and tell us about it or an experience you've had with cooking with one of them.
Do
you have
any kitchen
disasters or kitchen successes? Or?
Kitchen disasters. let's see. I'm doing I'm weighing equal. They're pretty equal with kitchen successes. Yeah. You know, when I was totally in, I like to can things, but I don't like to just can sort of commodities. I think to me, that's kind of a big waste of time. The idea of just putting up a bunch of peaches, I'll just rather wait till they're fresh, you know, or green beans or something. If they're dilled or something, okay. If you enhance it in some way, I go for it. But, you know, just to put a bunch of hot sugar water in a jar in this day and age, you don't really have to do that. So I digress. But I made
like
ketchup.
Canned peaches.
Oh, canned peaches are, no, you can eat canned peaches, but it's a lot of work.
I mean, home canned.
Yeah, home canned's okay. Yeah, okay. I'd rather make, you know, jam, maybe.
Yeah, I would
or
too.
Or peach
really
butter or something. But the first thing I made like that was a ketchup, because I've always heard homemade ketchup is so much better than what you can buy commercially.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of the irony of the story, the buildup, since we only have in half an hour, I'll make it quick, is it's basically like a day preparation of getting all this stuff together, getting your tomatoes, sweating the onions, getting all the spices together. You've spent a lot of time to get this thing rolling. And then all you have to do is wait for it to simmer and cook. So basically with ketchup, it's what you think it is. It's a ton of tomatoes, herbs and spices, some sugar or honey, onions, garlic. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so it's sitting there and it's it looks like it's a giant tomato sauce and you're reducing it through evaporation and heat. So I have it on the lowest little setting I possibly can. And then this is what I always do. And I just need to have like, I need to have like a shock collar that when I leave my kitchen, it shocks me. that I am like, and so, you know, I saw something shiny. I went outside, a neighbor came by, and then I went into my greenhouse and then I was doing something else. And then I went, oh, I got to go down to the orchard and turn off the water. And then, you know, like probably close to an hour and a half later, the light bulb went off and I went, oh my God, the ketchup is still on the stove simmering. And so I didn't even want to go in the house. Since I see it wasn't burning down, I thought, well, at least that's a plus.
I still have a home.
Still have a home. So I walk in the door. The whole house smells like burnt tomato sauce. And what had happened, it had reduced to this sort of globular, elastic consistency that when it bubbled, it created this giant sort of Vesuvius mountain.
Like a dome?
Like kind a of? Dome. And then when it get to the top of the pot, it would go splat.
Oh, no.
And it would be like the split, and it would then basically cover the entire kitchen. I had ketchup stalactites, stalagmites. My dog was sitting there trying to lick it up the whole time, so you could see like it looked like I tried to wipe up a dead body I'd moved, because there were licks all over the place of you know, dog licking tomato on the floor. The stove was completely you know, covered in burnt ketchup. And then the pan at that point, the bottom was basically glass. It was, so anyway, that was my biggest and best kitchen disaster
that
ever.
That is a good one. That's a really good one. I think the worst one I had was dropping the turkey on the floor.
Did anyone see you?
No, so I just put it back on the plate.
Right on, sister.
it fell apart, you know, and so I just arranged the pieces prettily. There were no dust, you know, mites on it, or what do you call them, little mouse dust mice.
There are some people, though, that, you know, they drive you a little bit crazy with their cleanliness. Oh, God, no one will ever eat.
Oh, no, no one's ever going to come to my house again.
You've just failed the health department test.
Like I have a friend of mine who I'm serving raspberries, and she goes, oh, did you wash these? I go, no, wash them. I don't spray them. And she goes, well, you really should wash them. You don't know what's on them. And I go, nothing's on them.
Air.
And so then, of course, she has to go wash them, which I'm just sort of like, good thing I like you. But then it ruins the berry. The berry gets soggy and gross.
And you don't
wash the berries. That's what Martha Stewart says. If you grow organic, you do not have to
wash the produce. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking
and plus
of,
she has her minions to polish them off anyway.
That's true.
But Linda, I can't believe your worst disaster was just dropping the turkey.
Yeah, well, it seems like you're really not
fessing
up. I don't
have anything to compare to. I've burnt many things in the oven. Like, you know.
Have you ever left out an ingredient sometime?
An important one?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. In cakes especially.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and I don't know what that is about, but sometimes when I'm making a cake, it doesn't rise, and then I realize, the baking soda and baking powder are sitting over there.
Exactly.
You know? I once created a cow pie in a pan.
Okay.
Okay, we'll bite.
We'll bite.
This is when I was first, well, I wasn't first cooking, but I was trying to saute spinach in a wok.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And somehow, as I sauteed and stirred it, it all just kind of cooked down, and by the time my family came to eat it, it looked like a cow pie.
Oh, my God.
And did they happily eat it?
No, we threw it out.
Oh, that's too bad.
I've also made waffles that my sons used as Frisbees.
Oh, I've made some tough.
Oh, yeah. I've made hockey pucks for biscuits.
Yeah. My chickens love them, though. It's like, it's kind of like it sharpens their beak.
It gives them a little jaw workout.
Uh-huh.
Well, I just have to get this little fact in here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Even though we're not talking about anything relative to this. Did you know that there is a cuneiform recipe book? It's like carved on stone tablets, like Moses, you know, with the Ten Commandments. It's that kind of thing. I forget where it's at. And it was done in the 700s, I think.
Oh, do they have like some spry Sumerian somewhere there stirring a pot? delight
in
their eyes.
Mesopotamia.
Mesopotamia.
Is that Iraq?
They're such show-offs.
Yeah, I know. They are such show-offs. But anyway, I just discovered that yesterday, and I was fascinated by it because it talks about, you know, we're talking about how recipes change over the years, too. And this talks about the things you put in the dish.
And what's available.
And what's available. And it was basically meat and onions maybe carrots or something, but mm-hmm. they didn't tell you what to do with it. They didn't tell you anything. Like if it's a, is it a main dish? Is it a side dish? Nothing. Uh-huh. But here's what we're eating. And so I have a little running history of my own cooking and my own, I'm working on a thing, but we'll see. Anyway, a long time ago, one of the cookbooks I brought is called Beginnings. And it's one that I wrote. I wrote before I knew anything about food. I wrote it probably...
And why'd you write it?
1971. Mm-hmm. Because I liked lemons. In high school. I was 12. but I wrote it because I love lemons. And I discovered mm-hmm. Preserved lemons through Molly O'Neill's article in the New York Times mm-hmm. in the 90s. And I didn't actually write this in the 70s. I wrote it in the 90s. But it's about what happened in the 70s. And my first acquaintance with picking lovely lemons from the tree in California. I had to climb over a fence and do all that, you know, and mm-hmm. it was quite...
Make sure the person wasn't home.
Right. And so...
Stealth lemons.
Falling in love with preserved lemons made me write a book. And I make my own preserved lemons.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
Oh, they're just awesome and they're easy to make. And I hope that people will do that. If you just look up preserved lemons, it's lemons and lemon juice and salt, cardamom, mm-hmm. maybe cinnamon and a bay leaf.
See, that's great because you do. I would love to sort of have you make something with that for me.
I'd love to
dinner. Because I'm all about the sweet part of the lemon. Like I'll make I call it lemon slush where I puree. Mm-hmm. I puree two seeded lemons, usually Meyer lemons, in 2 cups of sugar, and then I put it in a jar in the freezer. And anytime you need like a blast of lemon in anything, sweet or not, you know,
what a good idea.
It works great.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I'll make you a preserved lemon dinner. We'll have something. I like it in anything. I eat
yes,
it.
Score.
I eat it with my fingers sometimes. They're just so good. They're
good.
So rich and lovely. And yeah, we'll think of something Moroccan probably.
Okay. Do I have to wear a caftan?
Probably.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay.
We'll see. A fez, maybe. I don't know.
All right.
But another book I wanted to bring your attention to is called First Catch.
Mm.
And First Catch is a study of a spring meal by Tom Eagle. And this book is brand new. It just came out. I just got it. And it's the most beautiful book written on how to cook, but there's no recipe. It's a beautiful literary work. Like here is on boiling and pickling with water. Or on cooking with wine and vinegar. And he debunks a lot of the things that we think are true about cooking. But more what he does is he takes us into his kitchen and we are there with him when he's talking about, I'm standing at the stove and the onion looks like this and the carrot looks like that, but that's a mistake, so I'm going to go over there and fix that. And he shows us how he does that. And I just think if anybody wants to read a really good book on food, mm-hmm. First Catch.
Sort of be immersed in the process and the
process.
Love of cooking.
Yeah. And for me, that's what cooking is mm-hmm. the process. You know, you get in the kitchen and everything else goes away.
It's kind of like
an art form.
Like Babette's Feast. That's what...
Oh, let's watch that.
I know.
To do that. And then one other book I brought is called Salmagundi. And that's written by a friend of mine named Sally Butcher, who lives in London and has a restaurant called Persepolis in London?
Persepolis is in...
Peckham.
Okay, Persepolis is in Iran.
Well, I know, because she's married to an Iranian man.
Oh, cool.
And they have a wonderful restaurant. It's a beautiful
What's
restaurant.
What's it called again?
What's what called?
The restaurant.
Persepolis and Peckham.
Oh, that it's like a combo name.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had forgot, and then you remembered.
I think I forgot.
But no.
But I think I remembered correctly. I hope. It's snowing out again.
Yep, it is.
So, beyond that, every recipe in here is a salad from around the world. So she basically feels like you can just build anything into a salad. What I learned from her writing in here is that there is a word called salating, S-A-L-L-E-T-I-N-G. And in the olden days, it was just salat. And salating is you're making a salad.
Yeah.
It's a real word.
I do a lot of salating.
Do you?
I do little salatine.
Yeah. Well, you would if you had this book.
I would.
This is a fabulous book. It's got all kinds of things to do with, here's scallops and chimichurri.
That is my culinary fault.
Salad?
Yeah. It is. I know if people don't know, people, my I'll know that people don't know me well when they go, could you bring a salad?
Yeah, no, they never ask me to bring a salad either.
They always ask me to bring a salad because they know that's all I can do.
But I'm trying.
But
I'm
there are Italian things in here. There's biryani salad, quinoa and garlicky eggplant.
What's your favorite salad?
Probably citrus with fennel.
Mm, nice.
Tarragon, little vinegar and olive oil.
Yeah, mine is a romaine and winter pear and gargonzola. With just like a light vinaigrette.
Oh,
and walnuts. And walnuts. You need walnuts on that.
I was in Astoria last weekend at Fulio's and had a grilled Caesar salad.
Oh, I've had those. Those are
beyond good. Delicious. It was so good. So yeah, salads are good. They don't have to be, you know.
They don't have to be iceberg.
Spring greens.
A wedge and spring and French dressing.
Well, actually, I like a wedge salad.
I have no trouble with that.
No.
What about Russian dressing?
Oh, well, maybe. Depends.
No. I think when I grew up, I grew up in the South, and like salads were basically a wedge and multicolored dressings. And at that time of my,
Green Goddess.
Yeah. The first time I had blue cheese, we were at a company's house. At a friend's house, and I had blue cheese, and I thought my mouth was just going to like come off my face because it was so awful to me in second grade. So I said, I had to rush to the bathroom and I washed my mouth out and then got the toilet paper and tried to dry it out. And then, of course, I got that
toilet
in my mouth.
Oh,
nasty.
And then Mrs. McBurney said, Tommy, is everything okay? And I go, yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, how are you with blue cheese today?
I love it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
No, that was, I just had the palate of a 6-year old, you know.
You just went to the dark side at six.
You know, plus it was Kraft. I think it was just some sort of, you know, at that time it was just an acrid white sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, are we? Oh, I need to say this.
Mm.
You're listening to 101.9 KVSH LP in downtown Vashon, Washington. And you're listening to Stirring the Pot. I'm here with Tom Conway and Susan McCabe. We're talking about cookbooks and cooking and all things relative. Tom, I would like you to tell me some more about your cookbooks.
Oh, sure. Let's see. What's a good one? There's another cookbook I didn't bring that I really like. You know, Granny's Attic. For those of you who are listening and not on Vashon Island, Granny's Attic is basically our iMagnum or our Macy's.
It's our everything.
It's our everything. It's our thrift shop and where you go, and basically everyone on the island recycles everything every 2 years. It just always goes back through there.
I saw a coat of mine walking down the street the other day.
Do you know, I had somebody inform me that I was wearing her husband's shirt. So that was when she goes, I love your shirt. I go, thanks. She goes, I donated it. You know, she didn't have to tell me that. But anyway, back to the cookbooks. They have really, so it's really fun. You can go through find a lot of good cookbooks there. And one of them I found was the New York Times, and it was a Craig Claiborne was, I think, the editor for it. And it was New York Times Heritage Cookbook.
Oh, I have not seen that one.
And so what's really great about that is you go basically Heritage Cookbook, 50 state Heritage Cookbook. So you go through each state and they basically try to round up the defining recipes of that region or that state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really good. And there, what's really fun about that is there's a lot of like sloppy cakes you take to potlucks, church
big
suppers.
Yeah.
And so I've enjoyed that one.
You know, Molly O'Neill did a book like that called One Big Table.
Mm.
And she did that maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And it's recipes from every state and every table, you know, people, stories about the people that wrote the recipes or have that wonderful home cooking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what this is?
Yeah, it's exactly that way.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Tom, we're running out of time. I can't believe it already, but I think maybe we've hit on something, and I'd like to invite you to come back and talk some more about cookbooks at another time.
I'm available through 2022.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you are. Okay. Well, and thanks to my listeners.
That's as far as I plan.
So glad you're there, and I look forward to chatting with you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.